Tested is sponsored by Hungry Harvest, offering farm-fresh produce delivered to your door starting at $15. Shop now with code WUNC. Every delivery supports local hunger-solving organizations. Find more at hungryharvest.net.
I'm Leonida Inge. This is Test It from WUNC, a look at what the day's challenges tell us about where we are, what we believe, and who we want to be in North Carolina and the South. Today, from the pews to the polls. For the most part, the inside of churches have been empty during the pandemic. But a few blocks from my house in Durham, North Carolina, there seems to always be something going on at St. Joseph AME Church. Like the Saturday in July when health professionals transformed the church parking lot into a drive-up COVID-19 testing site. I guess, how does it feel that this testing site is here, probably so close to your home?
Oh, it's wonderful. I mean, I was in line earlier, and the line was down to Federal Street School.
Pastor Jay Augustine of St. Joseph AME says that's what the 150-year-old church is here for, to step up and shift into what's needed.
Our message has actually been amplified. So we are still very much engaged in the community, very much engaged in feeding the homeless. During this particular time period, we have also engaged in voter registration while feeding the homeless.
St. Joseph's Sunday services are still happening. Only a few folks are allowed in the sanctuary, like pastors and musicians, while everyone else connects online, streaming the service from YouTube to Facebook Live. But a church like St. Joseph doesn't stop with just prayer. There's going to be a message. And last Sunday's message hit the three P's: pandemic, protests, and politics.
You can't isolate what's going on now to just one person. What's happening now takes a whole lot of enablement. It takes a whole lot of backroom shenanigans. Can I use that word in the AME church? I was going to use another word, but I'll stick with that one. Backroom shenanigans.
Can I get an amen? That's the Reverend William Barber, preaching at St. Joseph. We'll hear more later from Barber, the former president of the North Carolina NAACP and co-chair of the Poor People's Campaign. His words and the actions of St. Joseph are examples of a well-established tradition. African-American churches have long been more than just a place to pray. There's a reason why so many civil rights leaders also had a place in the pulpit. Reverend Martin Luther King, Reverend Joseph Lowery, Reverend Jesse Jackson.
I think the clergy needs to be more active in helping people to understand the issues and helping people to understand how those issues affect their everyday lives.
Meet Reverend Lakeisha Womack. She's a business consultant in Charlotte and an ordained deacon in the African Methodist Episcopal Zion Church.
I believe that democracy is an experiment and it's not guaranteed. And right now, one of the problems I've seen recently is people are so focused on the presidential election that they've forgotten about the down ballot races. And I think that those affect people more frequently in their everyday lives than what we see in like presidential politics.
Womack has spent a lot of time developing a series called Rethinking Church. It included a symposium on voter education. She says it's an issue the church cannot ignore.
Well, I believe that the teachings of Jesus should compel us to want to be involved in civic engagement. when people rely on our government for medical assistance, for food assistance, for housing assistance, that those services fill in the gaps that many churches are not able to fill. And when we don't have representatives in office who care about the poor, or we care about those who don't have access to medical services, then we find that that puts more strain on churches and nonprofit organizations. Whereas those are some of the functions that the government can and already have programs in place to fill. So I feel like getting people involved in civic engagement helps us to improve the quality of life of our members. And I truly believe that that is something that Jesus would want us to do.
As a part of Rethinking Church, Womack has been interviewing folks who she refers to as everyday individuals about their reasons for voting.
I've interviewed several people from Alabama, which is just fascinating to me because Alabama is what many of us consider the birthplace of civil rights and the fight for voting rights. However, in a lot of areas, voter turnout is really low. And so through these conversations, we're trying to help people to understand how important their vote actually is. There was a young lady who came on and she ran for an office, I think in New Jersey. And we had conversation just about the importance of voting and how there was a race in her area where someone lost by like 30 votes. And sometimes people think that their vote doesn't matter, but in local elections, sometimes it is the difference between like 30 or 100 votes. And you might be one of those 30 votes that could have had an impact in that race. And so just really trying to bring it home to people on a local level how important their vote is.
For Womack, voting and being civically engaged was second nature for her family growing up in rural Alabama.
Voting was just like as natural as, you know, registering for school. It was just what you did.
But she soon realized that for many folks, coming out to vote wasn't on everybody's calendar.
And my first job out of college was working as a campaign manager for a young man who's now in the Tennessee House of Representatives. And as we were out like canvassing the community, I really was surprised at how many people were just apathetic about voting. Like they were just like, why do I need to go vote? And it was just like astonishing to me because like that had never been my experience in my family. And as I got out and, you know, to see the communities who don't typically vote and who don't place a premium on voting, and then looking at the conditions of those communities and then comparing that to communities where people do habitually vote and the conditions of those communities, it really helped me to see the parallel between our civic engagement and how resources are allocated. And I want there to be some level of equity in our system. And I realized that that comes through voting and activism.
I'm sure you've heard of the separation of church and state. I wonder if being that involved in the church, especially during an election season, is that okay?
Well, yeah, it's interesting because I often hear people bring up the separation of church and state, but in reality, there is no separation between church and state because a lot of the candidates who say that we should have a separation of church and state are often the ones who are trying to legislate Christian values. So I find that that term is used conveniently when certain people's positions are being marginalized, because in reality, most of the legislators that we have are attempting to legislate their Christian values. As a Christian, I truly believe that our country should help the least of these, because honestly, there are some people who will never, you know, work a six-figure job. There are some people who will never live in a really nice house, that will never drive a brand new car. But does that mean that those people should not be taken care of? And I believe that that's why we pay taxes, to ensure that those people have a safety net.
Well, of course, you know, we're in a pandemic and people aren't able to like go to the regular church services that they're used to attending. And I'm not going to pretend that through my lifetime, my parents, my grandparents, my great grandparents, that the church has been important to all aspects of their lives, you know, education and the political process as well. So what are some of the things you've noticed or some suggestions that you've made recently about what churches can do better virtually or otherwise to you know, just bring their people together?
Well, from a voting standpoint, I see voter engagement a lot like discipleship. There's usually an attempt by churches to go out and save the world, but many of us haven't even saved the people in our own families. Their congregations are already voting. Like most people who are in the church, like already got it. And that's a lot like salvation. Like most of the people who are in the church already have it. So our job is to go out and to talk to the people who don't get it. So instead of us trying to evangelize people who already have a church home, we should be going to the people who've never been inside of a church. And I see voter engagement to be the same way. Instead of constantly talking to the people that you know already vote, we should be going and finding those people in our family and those people in our community and those people in battleground states who don't typically vote, and having conversations with them to encourage them to get out and vote. If you know someone who's in Michigan or Ohio or Pennsylvania, you have family members there and they don't vote, those are the people that you need to be talking to. Continue to talk to your church members about, hey, you know, we're doing Souls to the Poll. Like, that's great. But you always do Souls to the Poll. You all always go vote. But what about those people in the areas where they're not voting? Those are the people that we need to be having these conversations with versus continuing to talk to each other about issues that we already agree on.
Do you have any examples of how churches can do this, I guess, virtually, you know, online now? Because I guess we have to live with what we have right now.
Well, my advice to people is to find 10 people that you are essentially going to do voter discipleship with and help them to create a vote plan. If people have an idea of how they're going to vote, you can help to hold them accountable to making sure they actually cast their ballot. So if you have a family member that doesn't typically vote, then call them up and say, hey, you know, I know you don't usually vote, but it's really important for you to vote in this upcoming election. If they give you pushback, help to resolve those issues. You know, if they're saying, oh, you know, my vote doesn't count, instead of just saying, oh, well, you have to go vote, you need to go vote, actually have conversation with them to get them to understand why their vote is so important. And then help them to create a plan. Are you going to early vote? Are you requesting an absentee ballot? Are you going to go vote on election day? Whatever their plan is, help to hold them accountable. So if I say, yes, yes, I'm going to go vote early vote, I'm going on October 16th at 2 o'clock, then I expect whoever's holding me accountable, you know, the evening of October 16th, then give me a call and say, hey, Lakeisha, you said you were going to vote today. Did you go vote? And then that helps me to feel like, wow, you know, there's someone who actually cares about whether or not I vote. So we need to make sure that we're getting people who are registered and who have the ability to go vote to actually cast their ballot and to figure out when and how they're going to do that and hold them accountable to it. And I truly believe that, you know, during the civil rights era, when, you know, church leaders were your community leaders, the church was where people went to get information. That's what the church was, a source of resources for people. And I believe that if the church is to be, you know, the bedrock of the community, then we have to be that resource for people again.
Reverend Lakeisha Womack is a business consultant and ordained deacon of the AME Zion Church. She says she plans to be one of the first in line on the first day of early voting to cast her ballot in person. More in a moment.
Tested is a production of North Carolina Public Radio, WUNC. And this is a good time to say thanks to everyone who supports WUNC. Whether you're an individual donor or a business, we can't say thank you enough for providing us with the resources and opportunity to serve the state of North Carolina with up-to-the-minute news and information. Everyone at WUNC is working around the clock to do just that at this unique and perilous moment in our history. And we couldn't manage without your help. So thanks, and if you are able, please go to WUNC.org if you want to donate for the first time or to maybe increase your support.
President Donald Trump has tested positive for COVID-19. The diagnosis will certainly make the virus even more of a center point of conversation in the lead up to Election Day. But how Trump's infection will influence the election remains to be seen. For many Americans, their vote is already in. The numbers from the U.S. Elections Project show more than 2 million people have already voted. In North Carolina, there's been about 300,000 so far. All those folks had their minds made up when Trump and Biden went head-to-head in the first presidential debate Tuesday, but I'm sure many tuned in anyway for the high entertainment value a circus is known to bring. Even though it might be best for our sanity to avoid watching more debates, the Reverend William Barber preached last Sunday about why this is not the time to ignore politicians, and as we heard him say earlier, their backroom shenanigans.
Can I use that word in the AME church? I was going to use another word, but I'll stick with that one. Backroom shenanigans! Huh?
Barber has been well known in North Carolina for a long time, but gained national prominence leading the Moral Mondays movement, many have said is the right mix of, quote, piety and politics.
Today we have politicians in place, from the White House to the Senate. They may not be as evil, policy evil, as their foreparents were that embraced slavery outright and embraced Jim Crow. But they are engaged in policy evil because they still hold on to racism.
And he says that's not right. Barber also says it's not right that politicians aren't reaching out to the poorest among us. It's a population with historically low voter turnout, but one he says is pivotal to get to the polls.
And if I had time, I would tell you we need to vote for health care. We can't stay here. We need to vote for living wages. We can't stay here. We need to vote for voting rights. We can't stay here. We need to vote against police brutality. We can't stay here. We need to vote that we treat vote for COVID. We can't stay here. And if we vote, God will use our faith and use our works to turn things around. If I didn't have to go to D.C.
Makes me wonder how things might have been different if Reverend Barber was the moderator of the first presidential debate. That's it for this episode of Tested. I'm Leonita Inge. Charlie Shelton Ormond is our producer. Lindsay Foster Thomas is the executive producer. Thanks for listening.